I'm glad that people are paying attention to logistics and its impact on warfare. But it's something that is a strength of the U.S. and a failure in Russia.
Where do we Americans excel with logistics that separates us from the other great military powers?
Number one, almost all of our wars in the last 100 years have been overseas from the United States. First, we have to plan how to get there. And then once we get there, we have to plan how to support ourselves in that new location. Could be in the Pacific, could be in the Atlantic. So we don't know. Second part is that you need to look at the structure that we put together. We have a whole command called TRANSCOM that's nothing but logistics. It's a major command, just like CENTCOM is for the Middle East or EUCOM is for Europe. Third, and maybe the most important, is our logisticians in the U.S. have an ethos that says we will not let the warfighters fail. In the past, when people have run out of bullets or fuel, that's been something which we learned the lessons the hard way. We just have said, we're not going to do that again.
We don't fight wars with contiguous countries like Canada. What advantage does that have for Russia, given that it lacks logistical capabilities?
One of the principles of warfare that gives you an advantage is interior lines. The border that they have is contiguous to the place they're fighting, so they don't have to cross into enemy territory in order to support. They own it. It should be a significant advantage for them. And Belarus, I considered an adjunct to Russia itself, no different. So the interior lines applies whether they're in Belarus or in Russia.
The Ukrainians are resupplied by NATO, which has a continuous border in Eastern European countries. How will the Ukrainian resupply work, given that it is a war zone and its resupply lines are being harassed by the Russians?
I think you've already seen that. One of their first attacks was on the major airport outside of Kyiv. Russia assumed that they could take that down and it would give them the advantage. They didn't expect the fight that they got when they were there. And they also then had a long line back to the border to keep it supported. But the advantage of the interior lines applies to the NATO border countries. And we have been able to conduct resupply through those borders. That does not stop Russia from attacking, as we've seen they have done it.
In Ukraine, does resupply accomplish by rail, truck, boat, or air?
The answer is by all. Rail is the way the Russians prefer to do it, but rails are easily defined and attacked. Road networks, you have to plan for convergence of those intersections. And sea, with the exception of Odessa, Russia has managed to block off most of the sea lanes into Ukraine. But you don't choose one. You choose as many as you possibly can. Sometimes we do it by airdrop.
Can you get significant amounts of material dropped by air, or is that too limiting?
No, we do it all the time. We have aircraft designed to refuel from the air, and we also have rotary-wing aircraft that can go anywhere. They can sling load supplies as well as carry supplies internally. It's an area which we plan for multiple avenues to support operations and not just one or the other. But air is a very significant part of it.
President Biden made an announcement that he was not going to engage U.S. troops in the war zone. Who will be flying those planes?
We can bring the supplies in to those countries and then have Ukrainians come in and pick it up so we avoid entering into the war zone.
What caused Russia's 40-mile supply column backup?
I was very surprised that they would get themselves in that kind of a position. When you have a column of armored vehicles and then you have wheel vehicles behind it, and the conditions that they were seeing in the winter, even on hard surface roads with icy conditions, you have problems. And the same thing is true on the muddy roads that they got stuck in. Tracks have a better capability than wheels in most cases, but they were getting all of them stuck. It was very poor planning in using the transportation routes. They didn't appear to have any alternatives that would have alleviated some of those problems. I can add to that the great fighting that the Ukrainians conducted against these lines. They saw that as a vulnerability and they attacked it.
What happens to an armored column that is under attack that is literally stuck in the mud?
They are predominantly stuck because the conditions off the roads were very muddy, and once you run a few track vehicles through, you make it worse, and then the wheel vehicles find it impossible to get through. So finding a different route out of the road was a challenge.
The Russians have retreated back home to resupply. Will they improve their logistics on their reentry into Ukraine?
The answer is yes, but I also expect the Ukrainians to be better as well. They have learned lessons at the same time. The terrain is very different in the east and the Donbass region all the way down to Crimea, which I think they're going to try to link up there. It's an area which the Ukrainians have been fighting in as a contested area for many years now. So they know the terrain and how to fight in that area. Both sides will be learning from the past. And it's a different terrain in terms of being stuck on single roads that the Russians, I'm sure, will avoid. But at the same time, it opens up other vulnerabilities from different modes of attack.
You mentioned the problems with icy roads and mud. And we're now in mid-April, and the weather will be improving. Does warmer weather improve the attacker's supply lines?
Yes, it will. It gives them some advantages. We expect that once you get out of the thaw, it's better. But they still have rain to deal with. The Dnieper River creates one big boundary that they have to deal with. And those are the things that all military planning considers. Weather is always, but the other, it's the mission, enemy, the troops, the terrain, all have to be considered, and the time you have available.
Experts have said that the two things that the Ukrainians most desperately need is more ammunition and more armored vehicles. Is that something that's easy to resupply?
Well, supply chains are always a challenge. I take nothing for granted. Ammo is heavy. They need ammo, fuel, water, medical supplies. All of those have to be accounted for in this next phase on both sides. They've seen what their consumption rates are, and they should know better as they plan for the next phase.
Who has the edge with logistics?
Russia has a long supply line which has not been attacked behind it. And that supply line remains intact, whereas Ukraine has been under constant attack for some years now. So their supply lines have been broken up and they know how to fight through it, but it's still under attack while Russia's supply line is not.
Can NATO help Ukraine with logistics planning and execution?
They've been studying Russian vulnerabilities for some time now, and NATO has been giving them insights into what the Russians are planning to do, and they have an opportunity to be forewarned and not be surprised, and therefore that gives them an advantage as well.
Russia has been unable to achieve air superiority. How important is it for resupply and logistics?
Well, in modern warfare, you look at it from a combined operations, air, land, and sea. And on land, you use indirect fires, missile fires, all the capabilities, and you provide air defenses. It's an integration of all of these capabilities that gives you the real advantage. Russia has not been able to do that. In previous, earlier battles inside Ukraine, prior to 2014, they were pretty good at it. They seem to have failed to learn their own lessons.
Are both sides using drones?
Russians have a significant amount of drones and have used them very effectively. And Ukraine has also now, with support from NATO countries, been able to use drones effectively. And we're giving them new capabilities. We'll call them the suicide drones that can loiter and attack their columns.
It's been 20 years since the Iraq War. How has technology changed the nature of war since then?
Armor today is much more capable. The vulnerability, as you've noted, has been the top attack, and that's been one of the real keys to both the Javelin and the NLAW that the UK has provided to use top attack, which is the weak point against armored vehicles. We have significant air defenses, very clever radars that we can use to track and move our weapons to follow, but they also can be jammed. And so electronic warfare is a modern part of the battle as well. It's always been there, but it's significant in today's battles. And the other capabilities we have, which have been a challenge for Russia, has been modern communications. And we use very different communications, satellite observance, satellite both for reconnaissance and for communications is a new factor in warfare that has been around for a while, but is a big player in today's wars.
NATO is considering giving advanced equipment to the Ukrainian army that is untrained in using them. Can the Ukrainians be properly trained to use these weapons?
Well, one of the things you've seen is there's a transfer of the S-300, which is a former Soviet air defense system, to Ukraine. We're giving Ukrainian systems that they know how to employ. So we're trying to not give them something that they've never seen before, but we also have bought training for things like the Javelin and the NLAW to them.
How do you see this war playing out in the next few months?
It's going to be ugly. It's going to be lessons learned on both parts. It's going to be a continuation of civilians caught in between. We've always concerned about the use of chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons. That escalation would be a major turning point, which would really put us on the edge of a major long-term war. I don't think Russia is going to be able to just walk in and defeat Ukraine very rapidly.
We've heard estimates of 7,000 Russian soldiers killed and 30,000 wounded, which is about 15% of the active soldiers. How does this affect their fighting force? Anthony King says a unit with over 30% casualties is incapable of offensive actions.
Logistics has to account for casualties by providing medical resources and evacuation of personnel, and then you have to reconstitute units, which are below the 30% reduction. The logistics plan is how do you reconstitute and evacuate casualties and equipment, rebuild, and get it back into the fight.
Ukrainians have untrained volunteers. How can these volunteers help?
It is difficult to get people to be fully trained in a short period of time, but they can become effective. And we've seen that during World War I, World War II. Training can be done in a very quick, rudimentary way when you have to prepare people for casualties. Hard to train for that. And that's why we make our training very stressful. We want to induce those stresses in people before without hurting them. But the mental stress has a way of replicating some of those experiences.
What about using untrained volunteers to assist with logistics away from the battlefield?
Absolutely. If you go back and look at World War II, that's what we did. We took people who had the capability in their commercial jobs, and that's the jobs we aligned them with in the military. Not 100%, but that's what our goals were, to do that. So you take advantage of that.
I end each episode on a note of optimism. Paul, what are you optimistic about?
I'm optimistic about Ukrainians. They have shown a will to fight. They've shown a capacity to fight a superior technically and by numbers force and win. I'm just absolutely positive that we'll see that to continue. And I expect Russia to continue to suffer because of it.